When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
And hello, everybody, to a live, not taped edition of Rewind to Raw. I am John Pollock and Wei Ting. And while everyone is at home with their families, here we are, Monday night, ready to go at it, ready to chat about Raw, a blistering two-hour tour de force of action, 120 minutes that flew by. Enjoy them while they last. TikTok next week, the end of the USA Network era of Raw. Wei Ting, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. Yeah. I mean, I'm here with my family. All these people here watching us are our family. So happy to be here for the very last time on Rewind to Raw this year.
That's right. We will mention off the top that next Monday night, we will not have an edition of Rewind to Raw. But if we are so a part of your Monday night tradition, well, we won't be too far, because you can hop on to the Post Wrestling Cafe and join us Monday night for our best and worst of 2024 show, exclusive on the Post Wrestling Cafe, as Poison Ron, as Braden Harrington and Davey Portman will join us. And we're going to be talking about the best the year had to bring and the worst that it provided. So that will be in place of Rewind to Raw next week, again, exclusive on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and then we will be back to our normal schedule after that, including the first Raw on Netflix 2 weeks from tonight.
Yeah. And if there are any major notes, I'm sure we'll talk about it on one of the many other shows that we'll be doing throughout the course of the week.
Yes, we do many shows, so we will have plenty of time to catch up on everything. How are you? Are you well rested? Are you ready for this this holiday week?
No, I'm not well rested at all. Quite the opposite, actually. But I feel like I will be. You know, I feel like I'll be in decent shape, especially ahead of tomorrow's Christmas show that I'm going to be predicting will be pretty lengthy.
You think it'll be lengthy?
I predict it. We have quite the guest list.
We sent a lot of invites out. I'm hoping if they all RSVP, we might be in trouble. We might put our bandwidth to the test. We might be Tyson and Jake Paul to Netflix.
We shall see.
Don't worry about those NFL games on Christmas Day on Netflix. Worry about the Christmas show on YouTube and your podcast app of choice. But that is going to be coming out. When can people expect the Christmas show to be dropping, Wei, roughly?
I would say roughly sometime during the day on Thursday. Tuesday.
Tuesday is tomorrow.
Yeah. Tuesday, yeah. So, I mean, maybe. What do you think is a good time?
I mean, Christmas Eve, I think it's a kind of a...
Well, what time Christmas Eve?
I don't know. I leave this to you, Wei. You are the scheduler.
I'm going to release it in the evening.
Okay.
So you can have a
skip mass, you know what? With AirPods now, you can bring your headphones to church on Christmas Eve and just listen to us through the homily.
Sure. Yeah, you could do that.
Believe me, I'll be laying down the gospel on the Christmas show, so everyone will want to check that out. It's always one of our most popular shows of the year. You never know who's going to drop by, and Wei and I are also going to be giving the state of the post-wrestling address. It's time to shake things up in 2025, some changes that are coming.
A transfer window, perhaps?
Possible. Who am I going to be doing this show with? When is this show going to be? All these questions, lots of answers coming your Wei on the Post Wrestling Christmas show. So sit back and you will have multiple days to consume said show. We are going to be off on Wednesday. There will be no Rewind to Dynamite nor Pollock and Thurston. But after Wednesday, we're pretty much back to a normal schedule. We will have a Rewind to SmackDown on Friday evening. Sadly, the final two-hour edition of SmackDown. And then Saturday night, we're back with World's End as well. So we're right back into things. Bear with us as we have all of a Christmas Day off.
Oh, don't forget Rewind Away, covering Noah's
departure. Oh, of course. Yes, on Thursday. On Thursday, we're talking about Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama as well. Yeah. So departure coming your Wei on Thursday again on the Post Wrestling Cafe. So we joke that this is like a week that we're kind of a this is as much as we're putting out like hourly amounts. It's probably one of our most stacked of the week to be or of the year, to be honest.
Oh yeah, I think with the Christmas show we'll be more than making up for any missed hours. So yeah.
If anything, I was debating this. I feel that, I don't know if you have a thought if we want to talk about Dynamite spoilers at the end of the show or just leave it for people. I really care. If we do talk about Dynamite, it will be the very last thing on this show, so everyone will have a fair warning because we won't get to talk about it Wednesday night. But we will speak with you before World's End on Saturday. So
sure.
There you have it. Stay tuned on postwrestling.com this week for all the latest that is happening. Are you ready to chat some news items, Mr. Ting?
Let's do it.
Impact Wrestling is moving to Sportsnet. This is a deal that came down and was officially announced on Monday. So I had first heard that this was this deal was in place last Wednesday. I heard about it and thus did reaching out to a bunch of people. I wanted to get as many details on it as possible and couldn't put a story out until Sunday evening. I do want to give credit to BodySlam.net. They were the first ones that had a story up on Saturday, noting that there was a deal in place, and some details that I was able to get, they have since been confirmed. So Impact, the flagship Impact, will begin on Sportsnet 360 beginning on Thursday, January the 2nd. It will be in its same time slot, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. This will also include episodes of Explosion and TNA in 60, as well as other TNA programming from its library that goes back almost 23 years. So when it comes to this was advertised as an exclusive deal. The way it was explained to me is that Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet, by extension, they will have exclusivity on the Impact show itself and Explosion for 13 days, and then on the 14th day, that's when you can see it appearing on TNA Plus, Fight Network in Canada. So they will still be able, and with the other shoulder programs, there will be no restrictions to those. The only two-week restrictions are on Explosion and Impact itself. So Fight Network will still be airing TNA content. It's just in the case of those two episodes, they will have to wait 2 weeks after they air on Sportsnet 360. So for those that are outside of Canada, TSN and Sportsnet are the two major sports networks, and Sportsnet 360 is a channel that you do have to add to your package, but this is where WWE was housed. They are coming up to the end of their 10-year deal, where this was the home of Raw, NXT, Main Event, SmackDown, and Rogers, the parent company of Sportsnet, was also the distributor of the WWE network. So with that deal ending, Sportsnet is staying in professional wrestling, but they are going with TNA. So for TNA, they are moving from Fight Network to Sportsnet, which is a giant leap for TNA. Like, this is a very we don't know what the financials of this are, but just for exposure, this is really big for TNA in this country.
Yeah, for perception, it's excellent. It's a major step up for TNA's presence in Canada, and perhaps maybe a sign of interest in other parts of the world. I mean, it's I think strong enough the fact that they're taking over the week after WWE leaves. We saw a promo for TNA Wrestling coming to Sportsnet tonight, watching WWE Raw. So just to have the spot, I think is massive. Just not to even mention the huge step up in carriage.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really interesting being that, you know, in Canada, all WWE programming is moving to Netflix. Mm-hmm. And it does make you wonder, like, what size of audience does not have Netflix, that doesn't plan to get Netflix with WWE's move? I don't know if it's going to be a giant number. Like, certainly if you are a WWE fan, it's a must have in this country.
Or I would also suggest people that just aren't in the habit of turning on Netflix, but are in the habit of having TV on. You know?
Well, that's a huge thing, is that there is an audience that is not going to be, you know, they don't stream their content. And there is the argument of, you know, for that first week of putting TNA programming in those old WWE slots, like maybe, yeah, that's not going to appeal to a WWE fan that's going against Raw or against NXT. But if you're just in the habit of turning on Sportsnet 360 on Mondays at 8 o'clock and you tune in and it's a game or it's a sports wrap up versus, oh, it's wrestling. Like that's what you are hoping for here. I don't know if TNA is just going to capture this gigantic audience, but I mean, they're just going to be in front of so many more eyes in Canada on a network that is not only has been the go-to network for professional wrestling in this country, but is also the broadcaster for the UFC. It's just such a big step up from Fight Network, where you really had to, you had to be specifically looking for TNA. In that case, it's a very significant one. And it does make you wonder of like how much TNA is going to focus like its resources in this country now that it has a platform. Like I would argue Sportsnet is stronger in Canada than Access TV is in the US in terms of just accessibility, not numbers wise, but it just in terms of per capita, the amount of people you're going to reach, like you could argue they have a better exposure in Canada now than the US.
Does TNA qualify as CanCon?
I don't know. I don't know if it does or not. Like certainly it is based in Canada. To qualify for CanCon, it's several like buckets you have to qualify for. And I just don't know what the answer is.
Okay. I'm curious to know about
but
that.
But that if they did, like certainly that's another bonus for Sportsnet if it does.
It's a lot of extra incentive for Sportsnet to want to show not just 2 hours of TNA per week, but a lot more of it throughout their schedule. Yeah.
So that is that is the major news. So again, it's January the 2nd that Impact will debut. They have a best of show this week, and then the next new episode will be January the 2nd, and this is the lead up to Genesis, which is January the 19th. So it will be a very interesting show just to see and weigh. Canadian ratings aren't going anywhere.
Oh boy! All right.
We'll have AEW. Thanks. We'll have TNA.
I imagine you'll be the deliverer of a lot of that information. So
first thing that went through everyone's mind. All right, we do have several stories up on the site, and TNA has actually put up like an FAQ as well. How this impacts you? Pardon the pun. And for those with TNA Plus as well, but it will be a 2-week delay for Impact and for Explosion. So that's the main thing for Canadian viewers. WrestleTix had several interesting updates about shows. Let's stay with TNA because they got the first estimate for Slammiversary, which is not until July 20th, but this is the show at the UBS Arena on Long Island. And thus far, this many months out, they have 1,556 tickets distributed. Now, this is a venue that, for a concert, can hold over 17,000. Probably a bit less for wrestling, but you get the sense. This is a gigantic arena. For TNA, I would just say if they were just running anywhere and the first estimate is almost 1,600 tickets, like that's a fine amount for TNA. I am sure this is going to be scaled at significantly less than what this venue can hold. But again, you have 7 months until this show. So I don't know how much you read into this number beyond just the initial interest when tickets go on sale, which for a lot of events, you see the big spike at the beginning and then the big spike like towards the end in terms of the run up to a big show. But this is so many months away. But it's a very ambitious show that TNA is running such a big arena.
You know, so early to really say, but maybe it tells you the current temperature of what an interest in TNA is.
Elimination Chamber, WrestleTix also noting, this is the March 1st show at the Rogers Centre in Toronto. Their first estimate of tickets distributed, 23,633. So we do know for UFC, they topped out at 55,000 for that show. We know WrestleMania, believe the attendances have been in the 61,000 range. However, the range of ticket prices listed here by WrestleTix, the bottom end is $170 and the tickets top out at $4,000. So if we just do some basic math and take this 23,000 number And every single ticket, now granted, some of those are probably comped, but let's just say for the sake of this, every one of those tickets was sold at the cheapest amount. They have already beaten the previous gate record for a show at the Sky Dome / Rogers Center, not taking into account inflation. But this is going to be, like the gate for this is going to be gigantic. It's, you know, given the amount of these tickets, I would guess that this early, a ton of those tickets are the higher level priced tickets for the show. So this is going to be a mammoth show, just gate wise for them. But at 23,000, and again, we're several months out from this show. That you know, this is obviously going to be
we don't even have a match.
We don't even have a match.
It's the chamber, but we don't know anything else.
Yeah. No, like you will have like this should easily clear 30. And it really does tell you like this show, they would have been underselling themselves to book the Scotiabank Arena for the show where they would have done, you know, half of this for the capacity and might even be compromised a bit more with the chamber and such. And then the other is All In Texas for July 12th in Arlington, Texas. Listed at 9,990 at Globe Life Field, which I would categorize as a fine number. Like you're at about 10,000 for a show that, like the TNA show, is 7 months out. You know, I don't think you see what the listed setup is there. Obviously, if there is tremendous demand, they can increase. Obviously, this ballpark can hold a lot more than 18. But I would say for AEW where it is now, there is a time that you might look at this as disappointing for your first stadium show in the U.S. Given the current climate for AEW, I think this is fine. It's a number to build upon. It's not a number that would scare you of, oh my God, they've booked a venue and this is all they've had. Like they, and Tony has already stated they have crossed the $1 million mark for the gate. So already this is like that's pretty successful gate wise, but certainly they are going to want to fill this place as much as they can.
Okay.
So there you go, Wei. Are you going to any of these?
No, I don't even think I'm going to the chamber.
You're not? Oh, no, okay.
Not really.
It's just too expensive for your blood.
Yeah, actually, partially it's that. I also kind of prefer the at home experience at this point.
Well, if you decide to drop $4,000, let me know.
Okay, I will.
Did you see any, all, or a little of ROH's final battle over the weekend?
I did not. No.
Well, the main stuff coming out of the show, we had Athena and Chris Jericho retaining their championships, and the Chris Jericho match with Matt Cardona, which I would not say the match really hit that gear that you would expect for a big title match. Like it felt like there was quite a lot of involvement with Matt Cardona's father, who seemed to be having the time of his life in the front row for his involvement here. But the end of the match, after Jericho retained, you had the return of Bandido. And unfortunately, this poor guy is just snake bit because he returns and his very first move is a springboard dropkick. And he just, his head bounced off the mat and you could see he was just on wobbly street. And you've got Paul Turner in there. He can sense something is wrong. And you pretty much just had to, like, he lifted up Brian Keith and then, like, just put him down. And Big Bill just had to leave the ring. It was this very flat return. And you didn't really know what the issue was. And then finding out after that, he suffered a concussion. And he did put out a statement afterwards. And that's basically where he is. He just stated, the blow was to a sensitive area of my head, and now I just have to wait and hope there's no brain swelling. Thank you to everyone who has been messaging me to ask about my current condition. So frustrating, obviously, for a performer like Bandido, who has been out for such a long time. They had these great vignettes to build up this return, and he was coming back for, obviously, a program with Jericho. So, you know, with a concussion, it's like there is no timetable for it. So hopefully it's a speedy recovery for a guy that, I mean, has just had terrible luck.
It just absolutely sucks. Heartbreaking, even. You know, they did such a great job with those vignettes for him leading up and building hype for this debut. I didn't necessarily think it would be returning to Ring of Honor. Nonetheless, this will probably, you'd expect to be a feud that would have made its way onto Dynamite with Jericho. Some of these things you can't control, you know, one of these freak accidents that I don't know if he could have really prepped for. So just tough break. That's all.
And just some other stuff. Commander won the ROH TV title in probably most people's pick for match of the night, the survival of the fittest with Brian Cage, Mark Davis, AR Fox, Willie Mack, and Blake Christian. Just a tremendous match. And then the surprise was Lee Moriarty, who had his open challenge answered by Nigel McGuinness. And I thought this was the second best match on the show with Lee Moriarty submitting him. It is one thing that you can, I think, a positive for Ring of Honor is that performers like Billy Starks, Athena, Lee Moriarty, Red Velvet on this show, like they would not be presented as this big of an attraction if they were in AEW. Like it would be very hard for them to step out, and having their own vehicle in ROH, they all felt like they were big stars on this. It's a smaller brand, but I do think there is a purpose here of like building up some of these people that the audience took to really well. But for a lot of people, they're not week to week viewers, but they were able to get, you know, a healthy, like 1400 or so at the Hammerstein Ballroom. And it was a very long show. I think like you could certainly look at that. This was like 5+ hours altogether, which is a lot for, especially for that weekend at Hammerstein. But I still enjoyed the show for the most part, with some unfortunate injuries in the middle there. And then we will move on to the road to the Tokyo Dome shows went down at Corcoran Hall on Sunday and Monday. And there was a bunch of news coming out of these shows on Sunday. Very sad note here for Wei Ting. One of his favorite championship belts, the King of Pro Wrestling title, is being retired. Great Okan and Tai Chi had their best of three falls match, which included a sumo rules match. Then Yoshinobu Kanemaru was the guest referee for the second fall. These were completely skippable falls. But then they had this incredible last man standing match where Great Okan sliced his back like he was Bob Holly that time on ECW with just a disgusting cut on his back, and he retained the title, really great third fall, and then announced he is retiring the KOPW championship and this year's New Japan Rambo, the bane of my existence when it comes to New Japan. That match this year, it will be for an IWGP title shot. Way, I cannot tell you I've ever been interested in the Rambo, but this year might be the exception where there is something real at stake, and they're already teasing like that surprises could be in this Rambo. And you could certainly go the direction of just a wild card that gets a shot, or you could go with a legend like a Yuji Nagata. Like this could build up to just a Corcoran Hall title match, or it could be something bigger. But I like the stipulation, and you're not going to get any complaints if New Japan was saying, let's contract our belts by one. Even though this has been a belt that has had more uniqueness than a lot of belts in New Japan's orbit.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's been the belt that has, I think more often than not, provided some level of like, what the fuck type of interest. But I don't necessarily think New Japan should be known for what the fuck type of interest. That's more of like DDT's thing, you know, like that's more like GCW's thing.
You don't need eating contests in New Japan.
I don't think it's necessary. No, I really don't. To me, it never felt like the type of title that belonged in New Japan. And I certainly don't mind this move at all.
Also announced is that the four-way junior heavyweight tag title match is now which they called it tables, ladders, and chairs match, which I don't know if they will get a kind nudge about using that particular term. But this is the match with Kevin Knight and Kushida defending the belts against Drilla Maloney and Clark Connors, TJP and Francesco Akira, and Robbie Eagles and Kosei Fujita. And this is the first time New Japan has done a match of this, like billed as a tables, ladders, and chairs match. And given these eight, this is probably going to be insane, like totally insane. When you have a Kevin Knight in there and you have a Robbie Eagles and like all of these guys, they're all going to be out there to try and just set the bar at some incredible level. This is just going to be a wild match, I think, for January 4th with these stipulations added and the fact that it's the first time they've done this on a New Japan card.
Can they call it a chairs, ladders, and tables match?
So the first time Kushida got on the mic and he was announcing like tables, ladders, and a desk, And I was like, please call it the tables, ladders, and a desk match. But then the announcers, and they repeat, and they did refer to it as tables, ladders, and chairs. But tables, ladders, and a desk would be tremendous.
Okay, well. How do you, wait, hold on a second. Hold on a second. A table and a desk?
That's how it was referred. The table and the desk were both included, but they were separate objects. I mean, not one was not to be mistaken for the other.
All right, okay.
Also, so I saw Sunday's show. I've seen half of today's show, but on the first night on Sunday, the main event, Zack Sabre Jr., they were in a tag match. It was Zack and Kosei Fujita against Hiroshi Tanahashi and Shota Umino. And if you remember, in the World Tag League, Umino missed a day with an ankle injury, so Zack went after the left ankle. So the story going into the Dome is that Umino has re-injured this ankle, and given Zack's style, I would imagine like this is the signal. This is going to be a heavy bodily-based match target for Zack Sabre Jr. I have not seen today's match, which apparently was a great main event, again, with Zack and Umino on opposite sides, and it went about 26 minutes. So we will see how much impact these two are able to have. I don't doubt the match is going to be above people's expectations, but a lot of this is on kind of the sizzle going into this. And other things from the shows, we had Oleg Bolton pinning MLW champion Satoshi Kojima on Saturday, so they were playing that up, potentially Oleg Bolton getting a shot at that title. And Chris Charlton mentioning that Hanare, who's out with a knee injury, is not likely to face surgery, but will still be out for some time. And they were constantly pushing on both nights, pushing fans to be taking videos and posting stuff on social media, which New Japan has been extremely harnessing of its fan base when it comes to social media. So it was interesting to be hearing that. Like, they seem to be encouraging people to be recording stuff and putting it on social media. So I don't know if that's a shift for New Japan that has been very much stuck in the past with that, with a very restrictive philosophy when it comes to kind of fan-based footage and utilizing a lot of that.
They're in a position now where they need as much people talking about them as they possibly can, you know, and it kind of makes the days of like them copyright striking these excellent video essays that are in no way competition for what they offer seem so close-minded.
It turned a lot of people away from the product that were putting like that kind of, like, they were doing the work for you. So it was a very counterproductive measure, and, you know, it's, I don't want to say too little too late, but at least it does seem like that philosophy is hopefully shifting. Hopefully it's extends to kind of stuff like that you mentioned. And finally, cards coming up. Well, NXT.
Just on the New Japan front, we had a big return.
Oh, yes. El Fantasmo was the big return on Sunday. So what they had, this was Jado coming out in a Santa Claus outfit, and then revealed in the sack was El Fantasmo's like a light up deal, and Fantasmo came out to announce that he had left after he had discovered a tumor that was considered cancerous. He has gotten a clean bill of health, and he's returning on January 4th. So he's been inserted into the previous three-way match for the television title. It will now be a four-way with Ren Narita defending against Fantasmo, Ryohei Oiwa, and Jeff Cobb. And I mean, it's certainly El Fantasmo. He got a major babyface response. He came out with a Canadian flag with all these messages of encouragement written over the flag. He certainly felt like a big babyface. And I have always been high on El Fantasmo getting a serious singles run. And it's kind of unfortunate when something so significant is kind of the impetus for that. But he is coming back as someone that I think New Japan could do a lot with in terms of a foreigner that the audience could take to. Like, he was, and not just in the heel role, but like the babyface role, I think he could be someone of significance this year.
Oh, I think already showed great glimpses of that, you know, in the G1 and everything. And I just the fact that this man's able to have a clean, you know, bill of health is enough to celebrate. But the fact that he's able to come back to professional wrestling and come back this soon is it's a lot more than I was expecting. So one of the great happy stories of the year, I would say.
Yes. And just for Wrestle Dynasty, we got updates on the ROH show. Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Sho sent in a video challenging Sammy Guevara and Dustin Rhodes. So We will get an ROH tag title match on January the 5th. And this follows the news that Dustin Rhodes has signed a new multi-year deal with AEW. He is 55, stating he will end his career here. So we'll see how many years Dustin has left to go. But certainly he would also seem like somebody that would have a contribution beyond just wrestling for AEW. So that's happening January 5th. And also the four-way Women's Cup. We have all the qualifiers now with Willow Nightingale, Persephone, and Athena. And they are joined by the Stardom representative, Momo Watanabe, for January the 5th as well. So a lot of matches coming your way at the Tokyo Dome, January 4th and 5th.
Yeah, well, we'll have coverage of those shows next week here with Bruce and Karen, first of all, delivering a New Japan Pro Wrestling primer for our Post Wrestling Cafe patrons. So if you're signed up, you can get caught up on all the major storylines and matches heading into Wrestle Kingdom. And then on Wrestle Kingdom night, you'll actually get a free review from Bruce and Karen, while John and I will be handling Post Wrestling Cafe duties and giving you guys an extra review with a bit more of a condensed play-by-play over at the Post Wrestling Cafe.
It's Tuesday night. NXT, it will have this was a taped show. This was the second taping from Lowell, Massachusetts last week. Christmas Chaos Fatal 4-Way with OTM, Hank and Tank, Stax and Luca Crisafino, and Tavion Heights and Miles Bourne. Ashanti the Adonis against Dion Lennox. Elba Fire and Isla Dawn against JC Jane and Jasmine Nix. Stephanie Vaquer taking on Cora Jade. And a Heritage Cup match between Charlie Dempsey and Lexus King, which sounds like it has quite the finish for the Christmas season. Wednesday night, Dynamite on 34th Street, which was their third taping in a row at the Hammerstein Ballroom. Will Ospreay against Brody King in the Gold League. Darby Allin against Ricochet in a Gold League match. Commander and Claudio also in the Gold League. Then Blue League matches between Okada and Shelton Benjamin and Kyle Fletcher with Daniel Garcia and Tony Storm versus Taya Valkyrie. So we will go over those at the end of the show, including the semifinals for World's End on Saturday, and that's about it. And we have got the final Rampage on Friday, your final edition of Rampage. As Tony Khan stated to the live audience, it will be the final Rampage for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it'll be back someday.
Maybe someday. All right, all of your news can be found at postwrestling.com. Neil Flanagan keeping you up to date all day long on Monday, while me and Wei were doing a lot of talking today. Coming up December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, two editions of Rewind Away coming your way, including Dave Bautista starting in the M. Night Shyamalan horror film Knock at the Cabin. Plus, we will review Noah's Departure card from 2004 featuring Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. Plus, reviews of ROH Final Battle, Strong Style Evolved, and the granddaddy of them all, the best and worst of show for 2024 with Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, Wei Ting, and yours truly. PostWrestlingCafe.com. But now we shift focus to Raw, taped last week in Boston, and Drew McIntyre is starting the show, and he reflects on Hell in a Cell, having 16 staples placed in his head and nearly breaking his back in that match. But what people don't know is that he went home to Scotland because a close family member died, and he says that probably a lot of the locker room are telling themselves, "I didn't know. We didn't hear about this." Well, maybe if you cared enough, you would have asked. And he states that since Hell in a Cell, one person called me to see how I was doing. And it's BS that we pretend to be a big family on the road together and spending all this time together. I guess, is that like a lingering thing where will we find out who this one person was that called him?
Maybe at some point we will. Yeah, whenever he's set to face that person, you know. Any guesses?
Maybe it was Paul Heyman.
Okay. Possibly.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. He blames Jimmy and Jay for stabbing him in the back. So again, this was taped before SmackDown, before his revelation that the Usos had nothing to do with Clash at the Castle. But he has given all this time and fought for you people, and then you all ran back to Roman Reigns and forgot about me. He said, "I am not going to give anymore. I am going to take." Reigns and Punk are the real fill-ins in WWE, and if you prop up people like the Usos and Sami Zayn, you better sleep with one eye open, because I'm coming for you. So Zayn interrupts this speech by stating, through. First of all, I didn't know what happened to your family member, and I just thought you had been injured from Hell in a Cell. You mentioned being in this for 17 years. I've been doing this for 22. I've gone through everything you have, and I've had to put loss aside and go on the road. I've missed weddings. I've missed funerals. I've put unnecessary stress on my wife and child, but this is the life we chose, and we are lucky to be WWE superstars. Everyone in the stands has a similar story. Kids who struggle at school, people at work, people who struggle economically, but they still get up and soldier on without pointing the finger at everyone else. The people didn't forget Drew McIntyre. The people made Drew McIntyre. And he says that someone once told you you were the chosen one, but you're not special. What's more likely, we find out who this one call was to Drew McIntyre, or they reveal who this someone was by name?
We find out who called Drew McIntyre.
I think so.
Maybe it was the same person.
It could have been.
Maybe he's more of a texter, I think.
Probably not a revealer. Yes. Jimmy, Jay, and Sammy have nothing to do with you, Drew. And Zayn says, I have no problem being your problem and facing you right now. And Drew says, Zayn, you love to spin things. But then, what a comeback here. You're able to fly home every night to your family. I don't get to. I'm from Europe, goddammit. And he reminds him, you've never beaten me. And I know, Sammy, you're not 100% tonight. So I saw your wife and kid backstage. Go back there and leave the arena. You're the least of my worries when it comes to the bloodline. Zayn admits, yes, Drew, you have had my number. And no, I'm not 100%. But I want this. So he jumps Drew, and Drew tries to get the advantage, going for the Claymore when Jey Uso is back after his attack from 2 weeks ago and goes after Drew. They double team him with Zayn, and that concludes our opening segment. I thought this was the best thing on the show.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought their match at the end was pretty great too. But yeah, in totality, you know, like when you're talking about a taped edition of a show, especially when it's taped out of sequence ahead of the Christmas break, like on SmackDown, I'm not expecting the best. And certainly this show was far from the best we've seen of Raw. But these two did not perform like it was a night off, especially somebody like a Sami Zayn who put in a lot of effort into just this promo itself. Drew was excellent too. He is fantastic, and we're talking about a lot of accolades for best on the mic in 2024, and he's being brought up by several people, and he deserves it. But in this segment, I thought it was Sami Zayn that totally shined. What an incredible promo. You know, he came out here and just did such a great job of pointing out the fallacy in the heel's logic, and he did it with such incredible passion that not many people in professional wrestling can pull off, I think, as strong as he can. I love Drew's rebuttal. Like even when Sammy is like able to inject so much I don't know reason into why this guy is wrong,
I don't get to fly home to Scotland every night.
He's still able to just circle back and point out any particular disadvantage he might have that he can completely amplify and cite as like, you know, the one reason why he should continue to be bitter. So he's great. I love the little dig he had in there about people in Boston, just like these people in Boston who never leave their town and they're always stuck with their families anyway. Got a great reaction from that. So just a fantastic segment.
Both were great, and it was a very tough spot for Sammy, who, let's remember, this was taped last Monday, and it's like you're coming off that Saturday night's main event match where he was beaten clean as a sheet, and we got to come back Monday and you're gonna lose again. And I think people at least have enough faith now that the fact they're really hitting this home that he's never beaten Drew, that there will be some payoff one day to all of this. But They had to come back off that very clean finish on Saturday and base a whole show around this rematch. And I think the promo was enough. Like these two, to me, like it was all on them to carry this 2 hour broadcast, because I did not think there was a whole lot going on this, I thought, kind of lifeless edition of Raw, but they bookended it with these two and it made up for what kind of felt like a bit of a throwaway show.
Yeah.
Pure Fusion Collective is backstage with Adam Pearce, and after they destroyed Kairi Sane, they want Sonya Deville wants the slot. And Pearce calls that a terrible idea. You caused this, and I've already filled it with Io Sky. So that's that. Io Sky, Natalya, and Elba Fire in the women's IC title tournament, winner to face Lyra Valkyria. Io Sky hit this suicide dive at the beginning, and she nearly just crashed on top of her head after rotating, coming down, but survived this. Came back after the break, and Sky hits a missile drop kick to Natalya, and then it's Elba Fire who places both women down and hits a double swanton. Both women kick out, and Elba Fire applies a Koji clutch onto Natalya, but Natalya postures out of it and then lines up both women for a double sharpshooter, which I don't think either of these announcers had ever seen before based on how they reacted to this. What's happening here? And then Sky hits an acai moonsault. Natalya then... This finish was odd. So yeah. Elba is on the turnbuckle, and Natalya comes from behind and Germans her off. And in landing the German, Natalya just lands in place for the over-the-moonsault. Like she had hit this German and paralyzed herself and was just prone for this moonsault. I had to rewind this. I'm like, did I miss something here? There was, like, Natalya beat herself here, and... Io wins, but a very odd finish to this match. And you could see after they were, Natty was staring at the belt, looking very despondent that she was eliminated here. So probably a story coming out of this. But Io advances to face Lyra Valkyria, and both semifinals will be next Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought overall the match was fine. Even like to good, you're talking about three incredibly capable wrestlers here. So in terms of like experience, I think one of the higher quality matches you might have seen in the opening rounds here. But the finish was perplexing, you know. Not only did Natalya have to stay in place, she essentially had to roll herself into position.
Because think about just the dynamics of hitting a German off the turnbuckle and having to turn yourself 90 degrees to be put into position for the moonsault. It was just very odd trend. Like, it needed something to get from A to B.
Poorly constructed, yeah. So, yeah, Io Sky finds herself taking over Kairi's place, and now I would suggest becomes maybe a front runner to win this entire thing, you know, because in the field we've got Io versus who's on her?
Io side? Against Lyra, and then Dakota Kai against Zoe Stark.
So what's your prediction for the final?
I'm thinking Kai, and I could see Kai and Sky, and you have the teammates potentially.
Yeah, I could also see Stark and Io, maybe more likely, just with the clear heel babyface dynamic. And
you
also,
might go with the Pure Fusion Collective feud and continue that.
Yeah, for the attack on Kairi and everything. But, you know, Io versus Zoe Stark. Zoe Stark really wasn't one that I would have picked out, you know, whereas Dakota Kai, I think, is somebody that they have been putting a bit of attention towards. But I definitely think Io makes it to the end now. I'm still more likely to pick Io versus Zoe Stark, and I feel like an Io, you know, IC title reign feels a bit more suitable as a way to maybe establish this belt. But they could go with the, you know, they could go with Dakota Kai, they could go with I guess Zoe Stark as other options as well.
Honestly, they could go with any of the four, but Io to me in the final, I think you want to, like, I would argue she is definitely the strongest of the four, and I think you want to have her with whether it be, it probably makes the most sense for Zoe Stark. I really hope that they kind of do something big then next week, because I think Zoe Stark is someone you want to kind of heat up for this role beyond just the attack that they've done, but that is following the story that they've been telling. Judgment Day are in the back, and we've got Liv and Finn Balor, who are like two teenagers that will not talk to one another, so they're talking through their friends and snipping at one another over Balor losing last week. Dom interrupts, "It's Christmas," and he states he's going to go to Adam Pearce and get a match with Damian Priest. And this was our AEW moment that happened several weeks ago, because during the first match, we got a graphic coming up, Damian Priest versus Dominic Mysterio. So this was did not exactly gel. And then Jay and Sami Zayn, they're embracing in the locker room. Zayn didn't know Jay was cleared and that he was returning tonight. "Thanks for having my back. Both want to face Drew tonight, but Zayn says, I started it, I need to end it." And Jay's like, "So I came all the way here for nothing." "Yeah. Okay, cool." And that was it. But we would get Jay a little bit more later tonight. What a reaction here from Sami Zayn.
Oh, he didn't understand the hand sign. Yeah.
Chad Gable against Akira Tozawa. This might be the shortest we're going to have someone go through a group here. This went 2 minutes. Tozawa got in some offense with a spin kick, and then Gable utilizes the Minoru Suzuki armbar in the ropes. Otis confronts Gable, who then slaps Otis, rolls in, and then Tozawa hits a super kick, goes for the senton. Gable gets the knees up, and then he hits the rolling Germans into a powerbomb before an ankle lock to submit Tozawa in 2:09. And they were also bringing up what Gable had done to Cody Rhodes several weeks ago with the ankle lock as well. But next on his hit list is Otis, as it kind of just feels like these could be separate in this transfer window. And we're just going to put a bow on this, this program.
Yeah. And a real lack of updates on this transfer window. You know, I guess maybe next week it will be their big push. Maybe they might even announce some actual trades, but the only one we've had so far officially has been Braun Strowman.
Maybe that's it. One move.
Yeah. They might be saving all the actual announcements for the Netflix debut itself. You know, we shall see.
Otis broke it up, and that's when Gable had the stare off with him, with Julius and Brutus, and they exited. New Day is in the back. They run into Dominic, and Dominic, they state, "You understand what we're going through?" And Dominic says, "I don't like Big E, but man, even I thought that was crazy." And they called him a broke-ass Tom Selleck.
I think Dom is so great. He's really just, he's just been, I never thought this guy would find such a fully formed character for himself, you know, when he started as just Rey Mysterio's son. But he's just, I think he's such a great part of the show.
Well, Dominic and Damian Priest, our impromptu match is put together. They are 1-1 in singles matches this year. The big rubber match coming here on December 23rd on a tape show. Priest uses a torture rack and then an elevated flatliner onto the desk when Damian Priest spots Santa Claus in the front row and he rips him over. It's JD in disguise. And then Wade points out that he knows the playbook. Damian Priest knows this is a Judgment Day gag. They'd be having one of their guys in a Santa Claus outfit, of course. Then he finds Carlito under the ring, but then Finn Balor jumps Priest, and the match is thrown out less than 3 minutes. They beat down on Priest 4-on-1 when Damian Priest's old friends, the War Raiders, come out, and they fight them all off and stand tall together. And we have a new unit here, Damian Priest, Ivar, and Eric.
Yeah.
Well, wait. What is their connection? Well, everyone, just remember, what is the foundation of friendship in professional wrestling? It's one company, and we will get to that later. And everyone is best friends. Except for their
cage match. Look at their history. Do you see three letters? That's all you need to know. Okay? That's all the backstory you need.
Next was Jackie Redmond, her sit down with Tyler Black here to talk about Phil. And this was conducted this past weekend. And Seth talked about CM Punk being a hypocrite for leaving this company. Now he needs this place. And he explains it's going to be a fight on January the 6th. It's the biggest fight in our sport right now. I don't know if it's John Jones, Tom Aspinall level, but that's how they're pushing this. And said that when he saw the Survivor Series, he wanted to throw his remote through the television. I was thinking this is where he was going to say he had put on the 2021 version with the Fabergé egg. But no, this was this year's Survivor Series. And what drove him to nearly destroy his television set was seeing Roman Reigns with his one in the air and CM Punk doing his stupid go to sleep sign. Which, I mean, that was a very goofy visual with all of them together doing their superhero poses. And Seth says, "You're going to see a side of me you've never seen before. I will be raw, visceral, and violent. I'm going to extract this demon from my soul." And in a first for any performer of a guarantee, "Cut this cancer out of my brain," to which I desperately hope he gets an MRI before this particular fight.
Yeah, that would be
really hard to do yourself.
Uh-huh.
I had brain cancer, but I fixed it.
Yeah, I mean, is brain cancer usually treated through surgery like that? Yeah,
Seth, this is not something you just get out of your system like that. This is not what is going to happen on January the 6th.
That's how much he hates CM Punk.
Tune in. First, self-surgery on Netflix. He's going to cut this cancer out of his brain.
This is one of those like things where if I clipped it and put it into a YouTube clip, it'd just be like a million people talking about
it. It's not what he meant. Don't you understand the story arc?
Okay. I've been enjoying these backstage interview segments. I think these have sounded a lot more loose, and certainly in Rollins' case, he's really kind of coming to his own as a guy who can just riff on these sort of things, and sometimes this is the stuff that comes out. As much as we might maybe look at it under a microscope, I think they've been great. I think he sounds as natural as somebody can sound saying these sort of words, and I think Jackie is actually really good in these, in these recent weeks, especially in her segments with CM Punk. I think she's become a lot looser and she's felt a lot more like a real person herself, and these segments have really kind of made her shine too.
She comes across like a very sane person in an insane environment. It's just like a lot of her questions are just, dude, this is really messed up.
Yeah.
And then they explain and they sound like crazy people wanting to use a cadaver on their head. The Miz and Dexter Lumis, as we get back to the insane world of pro wrestling. Wade Barrett, ever the WWE historian, notes that the Miz has been kidnapped not once but twice by this man in different storylines. And this is the heel, by the way, folks. Lumis hits a uranage, and then AOP show up. And so Lumis leaps off the top onto Razor and Occam, and then Cross runs down. And we get another match thrown out, two in a row. This one goes 2:24. This sucked. The final testaments surround Lumis, who then extends his arms and the lights go out, so the Wyatt Six appear with a big brawl, including Eric Rowan powerbombing Nikki Cross to the floor on top of the members of Final Testament to play things out. So give this one a couple more weeks till we get a redo of this match, but whatever.
I thought it was really weak, and it's like, okay, I would classify the Wyatt Six as definitely a success in the time that they've come back, but they've been used very sparingly, and that's why I think every single segment that we see from the Wyatt Six needs to be impactful, needs to be a positive one. This, between the match and the non-finish and like the pretty generic beatdown, just kind of made the Wyatt Six feel like any other group. And I think that's the worst thing that can happen to these guys. The more you have them out here in just like forgettable generic segments without anything accomplished, I think just kind of takes their what makes them feel special, what makes them feel like a justified sporadic act, takes that away. So I didn't like this.
Was Bo Dallas here for this attack?
I don't think so.
Okay. The War Raiders are backstage with Damian Priest. I take back what I said earlier. This was the best part of the show. Ivar points out, we've known each other for a long time, and there's an honor among us. Like, oh my God, did I really hear this? And then Eric takes over. Honor. We haven't always been friends, but you had our back last week. And we owed you one. And Priest says, if you guys are going to war with the Judgment Day, I'll go to war with you. And then they knocked forearms and they're now best friends. Because a decade ago, we worked for Sinclair together. Maybe that should be their group name.
Sinclair?
Sinclair Broadcasting. Sinclair
Broadcasting, sure.
I just love that there's so many connections where it's like, we don't have any, like, we never were that involved in anything else during any of these stories. We were in Ring of Honor together.
They went a step further. Okay. Now I wasn't watching ROH at the time, but they did go a step further and they said, we didn't always see it eye to eye. Okay, so I don't know if you were following John, but like, were they feuding with each other? What was like?
I'm sure there were. I was following ROH, but the Punishment Martinez saga, I'm sure it intersected with the War Raiders.
Okay, so they at least respected ROH canon enough to say, hey, we weren't necessarily teammates then. We must have feuded with each other back then, I think.
I just want to know when Kerry Sulkin's going to get a job as a manager for somebody here in this company.
Maybe he could join the Final Testament. You know, he could take over for join
oh
Paul goodness. Ellering.
Oh, could you imagine?
Anyway, yeah, like this just felt like the perfect segment for you and I. Okay, like I felt like they wrote this just for us as two people who have like kind of joked about their reliance on
honor.
Generic Ring of Honor backstory as just like the sort of catch-all for like story depth in relationship depth in the WWE. This was perfect. I mean, all that said, I really like the teaming of these three people together. I think they all wear leather, and that's really just as much justification as you need from me, you know.
Wow, this is I did dig up from March of 2017 at Steel City Excellence when we had War Machine against Punishment Martinez and a partner that was probably not going to be name dropped on this show.
Can I have a hint?
The name BJ Whitmer would be the right partner at that time. But yes, okay. This was back when they when Punishment Martinez was basically a zombie. That was kind of his thing, but he could do some cool high flying stuff. So yeah, some progress here. All right, so there you go. That's our new friends. Then there was another Penta spot. You think this is January the 6th, a good debut for him?
It seems like that would make sense, wouldn't it? Yeah, or the day after. I think you already have so much on the 6th that you risk people forgetting about this, honestly.
If only Raw was in Phoenix one of these weeks.
Yes. But yeah, we saw like a pentagram logo as well, so in case...
just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case.
You weren't sure enough. This is not... you know, I guess what somebody could mistake.
Is next week, it's just going to say Pentagon in block letters flashing.
Yeah. Sure.
Next week.
Well, you never know. You know, it could be a misdirect of some sort.
He'll come in. He's Rey's best friend because they were in Lucha Underground together.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if they recognize Lucha Underground.
We're going to find out.
It's like, okay, we have two places where people can come from outside of the WWE system. It could either be Ring of Honor or it could be Japan. Just yeah. Japan, okay? If we spent any time in Japan together, doesn't mean Japan. We don't have to be in the same promotion, okay? It could just be Japan.
We just work for the country itself, yeah. Not any companies or anything like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Or Cleveland, as we see with the Murder City Machine Guns. So.
Yeah, they're gonna teach an entire generation of WWE fans that like Ring of Honor was like it was like a high school
sure.
that they attended.
Yeah.
We go to a recap of the New Day of late and the fans turning on them last week. And then Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett are recapping the New Day's actions when Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods cut off Tessitore and Wade Barrett and they're being booed by the fans. I certainly got the sense they were probably manipulating this a little bit, the audio.
You think so?
I can't say for sure, but it kind of
felt pretty loud the last time we saw.
Well, regardless, it's... Even if they are just tinkering with it, it's enough that crowds are going to be taught when you go to these shows with the New Day, like you drown them out with boos, and it's just going to be natural for crowds, whether or not they are playing with the audio to get it established. But regardless, Woods asked what happened to unbiased journalism. Tessitore, your job is not to have an opinion. It's to tell the truth like we do. And then Woods makes a remark that Wade isn't even man enough to lace up his boots and get back into the ring. So they go into the ring. Kingston explains we could have laid out Big E and stretchered him out again, but we didn't. So why are you so upset? This was supposed to be my homecoming. I even paid for a plane ticket for my mother to come here all the way from Ghana. She sat in a middle seat for 20 hours. You are ruining her experience. And she is the woman that taught him how to be the man that he is. And she does not deserve to have her son booed in his hometown. And then we walk down and Kofi goes up to his mother, who stands up and wants a hug. And his mother just looks at him and says, "What is wrong with you?" And I was really hoping that they would just give her the microphone to just have one line. But it was enough that the crowd, I think, reacted to this. And his mom just packs up her stuff and walks away. Now, granted, this was a double taping. I don't blame the woman. She's probably exhausted by this point, waiting for her son's angle. But that was it. And that was great. A perfect usage of someone's mother to further your heel status.
I really like this. I mean, if Sammy and Drew was my favorite thing on the show, Kofi's mom was a close second. I like the fact that they were a bit more restrained in this. You know, they didn't have her like go for a slap or anything like that. Like, they were kind of keeping it nice and somewhat subtle and therefore a bit more believable. I thought Kofi's mom's acting was actually very good. So I hope to see a lot more of her somehow used in all this.
Now, would it have been an extra step if we had played off like this guy splurged for a middle seat from Ghana, and that he goes into the crowd and he got his mother like, you know, like bad seats for
what?
The show?
What's wrong with this? How could you get better seats than this? What do you mean?
I'm saying for the reason he was cheap and got her the middle seat for the flight, that he didn't get her a front row seat. He got her like some obstructed view seat at Raw.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it would have been a lot tougher to shoot the angle.
Yeah.
In that case.
So anyway, it was a good segment. I like this a lot. Next week on the show, the last Raw of the year and the last USA Network edition of the show, we'll have Honor, Damian Priest, and the War Raiders together against Finn Balor, Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh, both semifinals of the women's IC title tournament, with Io against Lyra and Dakota Kai against Zoe Stark. They have not stated the finals are on January the 6th, but I'm thinking probably, right?
Yeah, that show could use a big match, yeah.
I think they should not cap it at 3. I think they should just go as long as they need to. Like, just do everything that night.
This is a 10-hour debut?
Let's just keep going.
Okay.
Chad Gable against Otis, and... okay, we've done contract signings, we've done face-to-faces, we need something. Next week, CM Punk and Seth Rollins, under one roof.
Under one roof, okay. Interesting. Well, that doesn't guarantee you face-to-face. Technically, everybody in the arena is under one roof.
Okay, we're going to find out what that means next week.
Under one roof. Are they just like, are we just going through like, I don't know, like sitcom titles now? Face to face.
Yeah. Joe Tessitore actually went rogue because the text on the screen read under one roof, and he promoted it as under the same roof.
Ooh.
What is it, Joe? What is it?
Well, he's packing his bags. He's not going to be here for that show.
Joe Tessitore?
Yeah, isn't he moving? Isn't it McAfee?
On Netflix it is, but next week Tessitore's here.
Oh, that's okay. So next week is his last show, is what I mean.
Yeah, for Monday, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
we'll and then what? Is he over moving? The next week?
He's so what? Is he sticking around?
I thought he was like moving to Fridays, but I don't know that for a fact. Oh. I don't know if they've announced that or not. But it's not like he's leaving.
Okay.
So anyway, we'll find out what all these musical chairs end up with. New Day is backstage. They run into Rey Mysterio. Rey admits he could have handled things better last week. He just thinks the New Day should apologize. They're like, "What? We did nothing wrong," and Kofi denies any wrongdoing. So Rey says, "Well, I tried. The two of you are on your own now. And you better get ready to hear the words, 'New Day sucks.'"
Yes.
Thank you, Rey. He's been an enormous voice for the people and the locker room in this angle.
Rey has just gotten salty in his older years, I think, you know? He's just...
I mean, this is going to be their first target. They're going to destroy this guy.
Well, I mean, I guess somewhat justified. Rey's just kind of really poking his head in. I mean, last week I thought was somewhat, you know, reasonable. Like, he's here to deliver a message from the locker room of how he disapproves. But then this week he's just kind of like unnecessarily just maybe poking the knife and turning it, you know? So I guess what else is Rey doing on these shows?
Nothing. No, he's just the locker room leader.
He's just
in the back. He's playing dominoes and... Yeah.
Okay. All right. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
And then we go to our main event with Drew McIntyre against Sami Zayn. Tessitore says that Drew is 9-0 with one no contest against Sami Zayn. I did look this up, and it is in fact true that Zayn has never beaten him in a singles match, but it is much more lopsided than this if we're including all singles matches and live events and stuff. It's like 18 or 19 wins that Drew has over this guy. So maybe they thought that would be, let's make this a more...
Somebody somewhere did that research and figured out, hey, like, this is actually somewhat something interesting. Like, this feels like it might be like a taker streak situation where, like, they probably didn't intend on this being a thing at all. But, like, oh, okay, he's never beaten him in, like, 25 matches. So let's turn this into a story.
It does make it a little preposterous to say, yeah, Drew is 19-0 against this guy. I was like, okay, maybe we're not going to be maybe that's less of an incentive to root for this guy who has kind of proven there is a clear
even
pecking
9-0 is pretty bad, but I mean that's
with a,
maybe
with a
that's
no
his,
contest.
That's his WrestleMania moment coming.
Well, that's the number they're going with. That's Ric Flair's 16 world titles in WWE lore. So Zayn's back is attacked by Drew McIntyre, and he focuses on this. I guess this was what was bothering Sami, because all we knew from the opening segment is that he wasn't 100%, but they never established the back. But the back was the focus here.
He also did that, like, fake-out dive and seemed to favor his knee, but, I mean, maybe his whole body's just messed up from the match.
Well, maybe it's his brain, and he needs to extract something from his brain. Drew catches a pescado, but then Zayn breaks free, ramming his head onto the desk, and then Drew sends him into the steps and hits a backbreaker onto the edge of the apron. We go to commercial, come back, an inverted Alabama slam is turned into a victory roll, and then it's a WWE main event. So Drew goes shoulder first into the post, and then Drew recovers, white noise off the turnbuckle, Glasgow kiss, and then as he sets up for the Claymore, it's stopped with a clothesline. Zayn hits the exploder, and he's hobbling to set up the haluva, but as he goes for that haluva kick, the back gives out, and just because of the delay, he tries to reset, but due to the time he wasted, he's hit with the Claymore, and Drew pins him clean. 10-0.
Wow. The streak continues.
Yeah, That's it. And then he did the Undertaker. He put up his 10 fingers. Remember that?
With the MMA gloves, yeah.
It's like, oh my God, the man has been hit with arthritis.
I guess 11th time is the charm, potentially.
It could be many more before. I think this is a real long-term win that we are banking.
But hey, like these are the types of things that I think important stories are made out of. And now you're building a very, very tough challenge for Sami Zayn, maybe the toughest of all. I think great performance from Sami here. He was working his ass off. Like I said earlier, his promo did not feel like it was a double taping edition of a promo. He seemed to put his complete heart into it. And that went the same for the match itself. He was selling his ass off for everything here. Took some big bumps like that sidewalk slam on the apron. And again, just seemed to put a whole lot of effort in a match that he was going to lose on this evening.
Second time in 48 hours, too.
Yeah, maybe he had the encouragement that, hey, this is not going to air until, like, you know, some time apart. So hopefully the most people will forget. But nonetheless, his position is pretty low right now in comparison to other people. And we know he's there to just be the setup guy for Jey Uso, it seems. But listen, the Elimination Chamber is in a stadium show. It's not that far away, and he's arguably I would still say bigger than Kevin Owens as a Canadian commodity on this product on this roster. So I feel like he should be in line for something big. I hope he's in a more prominent spot in a few weeks, you know.
Maybe by this point they had a pretty good indication of what the final number was going to be for Saturday night's main event, and they convinced Sami. They're like, listen, not too many people saw this show, so we got to redo this.
Maybe they're just like, hey, like, we're not even on Sportsnet anymore in 2 weeks' time, so we don't really need to focus on Canada.
A whole new audience that hasn't seen you lose yet. So Drew continues the attack when Jey runs out, and he gets shoved off the top by Tama Tonga as the Bloodline appear. Drew just watches the Bloodline, and he exits, leaving the Bloodline to pounce on the two of them. And Jay gets out of the way of a hip attack, super kicks Tama, but then he succumbs to the numbers, is laid out with a Samoan spike. Zane prevents a second Samoan spike from being hit, but then he gets pummeled, hit with the moonsault, hit with the spike, and they stand tall as the Ulafala is placed around Solo Sikoa, and that is how Raw goes off the air. And I would say, like, we have seen, like, the hints of this, of Zane and Jay going on that tag run. It would seem both are sort of in a position where you could do this going for revenge against the Bloodline and then potentially, you know, maybe going for the belts on Raw or SmackDown down the road for some time. But having these two sort of as a makeshift team for the time being.
You don't think the Drew is going to be Jay's next target first before that?
Yeah, you do have to do that match, but I wonder if they're going to sort of have them tied here to the Bloodline.
They will, certainly, yeah.
Because Drew should not be losing at this point. They're building him up, obviously, for something big. So he should be beating Jay, and maybe you want to hold off on that for at least some time.
Yeah, before all of that, I want to see all of these guys in the Rumble. I mean, Sammy should be in the Rumble. Jay should certainly set his sights on the Royal Rumble. And, you know, obviously, Drew McIntyre as well, somebody who just... wants to be in that spotlight, right? So, I mean, I think they have to maybe put, like, the tag team ambitions aside if they do intend on doing that for the future. I also feel like we've been there with Sammy so much now. We've been there with Jay so much now. You know, of course, he's, like, in one of the biggest tag teams of all time in the WWE, won the belt with Cody. Don't necessarily care to see him team with Sammy, like, to go for the tag team titles. Maybe a one-off, you know, to oppose somebody in the Bloodline, sure. But I'm a lot more interested in the single stories with all these guys right now.
Well, I think it's more so the idea of some of these top guys, the idea that you have a partner, but you're also doing your single stuff as well. And that might be the case, is that at least for this stuff with the Bloodline, you have Jay, Sammy, and Jimmy as sort of this alliance within that whole group. And they can also do their single stuff as well.
Well, there's certainly, so Jimmy's injured, and that means these two, if Roman's not going to be here every single week, these two are pretty outnumbered. So I would love to see them incorporate more people. Like, there are a lot of baby fizzes out there that could love the association to a Bloodline storyline that I think could use the elevation. So I would love to see them bring somebody else on. You know, factions are the thing, okay?
Well, who else
has been in Ring of Honor with Sami Zayn that he could pull into this?
Jay, I've got somebody. Cheeseburger.
Yes. All right. Matt Taven makes the jump. Overall, this, for the most part, felt like a pretty double-taped edition of the show. This closing segment was about as generic as I think they needed to in order to avoid spoilers, because they were taping out of sequence. Nothing really progresses all that much. But I thought Sami Zayn's performance throughout the opening segment and the closing match was one of the highlights. I loved the New Day segment simply for Kofi's mother, who I thought was tremendous as well. So those are my two MVPs of this show.
Yeah, I would say the Drew and Sammy stuff kind of kept this show afloat. I did enjoy the New Day segment, but man, some of the matches here, like, we just had some, like, just non-finishes. We had a very bizarre finish with the women's match. I mean, it was this felt like one of the weaker Raws in a while, where Raw's usually been a pretty consistent show. So I wasn't crazy about this show. This show at 3 hours, I will detest.
I don't think they'll be doing double tapings when they're 3 hours.
I don't think they'll be able to. I think that's pretty tough to imagine. I mean, it's...
We'll see. For some of these Saudi shows, they might actually continue to do that. Certainly.
Let's also remember, and we don't even know what kind of the whole commercial situation will be. Like, there were times that they would be able to do the odd double taping, because they could do a Raw in a way condensed amount of time for the next week. It's not like you're doing it in like 3 hours. They had that down to a science, where they could probably get through a Raw in 90 minutes or less. But we will see what that whole situation is like. But there you go. That was Raw. Again, next week, it'll be the best and worst of show in this slot on the Post Wrestling Cafe. And then Rewind to Raw will resume January the 6th.
The Netflix debut,
where we will be going live at like 2 in the morning or something.
Well,
do you think you'll check out, just for curiosity, any of the NFL games on Christmas Day?
No, I don't think so. But I'd be curious to hear about any technical issues. But you know, it's a different audience we'll be talking about, won't we? Like,
yeah, I've heard people predict that think it could be bigger than the Tyson Paul fight. I just don't think on a worldwide level it will. And mm-hmm. again, we're going with the, it seems the, whatever the full streaming number was, the Netflix report was, you know, 65 million concurrent streams, which is just insane. Like, it's going to be gigantic on
Christmas
Day.
What does
the NFL
typically do on broadcast?
You know? I mean, last year they had Christmas Day games that I want to say, and it's worth noting, these games on Wednesday, they are airing in the local markets. So, like, that's a big part of the audience is, like, these, you know, they will still get them on television. But this is also worldwide. Like, last year, I believe one of the Christmas Day games did, I want to say, like, 20 some odd million people on broadcast. So, you know, you have a far greater reach. You know, you have a Beyonce concert in the middle of the second game on top of it, which could be the peak for any of the streaming. But yeah, it's going to be a really, really fascinating day for Netflix, for the NFL, because so many people are going to be paying attention and kind of just the volume. And it'll be a big win for Netflix if they go without, I would say, any significant problems. There may be hiccups here and there, but as long as it's not some kind of disaster.
Okay.
Yeah, that's coming up on Christmas Day.
We got some super chats here from our YouTube live viewers, youtube.com/postwrestling. Please subscribe. Thank you all those of you who are here for being here. Let's go to Jake from the Windy City, who sends $5 to say, Merry Christmas. How interested are you guys in the Mildred Burke biopic, Queen of the Ring, with Emily Rickards coming up? The trailer looks very sublime. I've not seen it.
The trailer was just released, I think, last week. This is based on Jeff Lean's book, The Queen of the Ring, which is an excellent, excellent book. Jim Ross is actually an executive producer on this film. He has, I don't know if that's the exact title he has, but he has a title attached to it. So this is the movie that has Camille is playing June Byers. You've got Toni Storm, who is also has a role in this movie as well. So I'm just basing it on the trailer. The source material of the book, I think it's one of the better wrestling books, period, that's been written. So I think they're following what's there's a great story. Mildred Burke and like it's a total made for it's a book that totally reads like it could be a fantastic movie. And I was certainly encouraged by watching the trailer. So I'll be curious how big of a release this ends up being. Like, I think your high watermark would be kind of the Iron Claw that got like a lot of attention when it came out. I don't know if this one will have that much, but we'll see. This might be the next time we get to see Camille in a wrestling ring.
Could be. Very well.
No, they have not mentioned her name since the attack.
I wonder if she's out. Like, could she be out promoting the film? Like, is that any reason for her?
I doubt it. No,
be gone.
I don't think she has that. I mean, she was at one of the recent premieres. I did see that.
Okay.
But anyway, it's coming up. I don't have the date off the top of my head, but I'm certainly interested to see it for sure.
We got a super chat here from JBoba28, who sends $5. Thank you very, very much for that support. He says, Rock is the one who made the call. It will be revealed that McIntyre is the Rock's hitman against the OG bloodline. Happy holidays.
Okay, well, that will be maybe this will all trace back to when Drew McIntyre signed his contract. Remember with the Rock?
That's not the craziest idea.
It's not. It's not. Really? That's a totally plausible reason to have the Rock kind of play. You know, manipulating all of this behind the scenes, and it's all a target towards Roman and Cody. Yeah, like that. That's not a bad idea at all.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that, JBoba. All right, let's go to forum.postwrestling.com.
Okay, we have a few pieces of feedback. We're going to start off with Jermaine from Chicago. This show is just okay. It would be cool if they found a way to make taped shows good. SmackDown and Raw was rough. A few questions. I've been watching the SmackDown and Raw plus the PLEs. Do you think the quality of WWE matches on the whole has slipped lately? I can't recall an outstanding match in months. As far as for you two, which match are you most looking forward to between Seth, CM Punk, and Roman against Solo Sikoa? I say Seth and CM Punk because the work rate should be much higher. What do you guys think? And happy holidays. Well, happy holidays to you as well, Jermaine. I can understand that there is, like, I certainly feel that there are WWE matches that I think right now you get a lot of crowd engagement for matches that are, I don't know if they are always in front of different crowds would necessarily demand the same kind of response. Where I do think WWE really does shine, I think their PLEs, granted, like their bigger matches, I think they have a pretty consistent delivery on their PLEs, but there's also, like, I think there's a dramatic difference you see between, an AEW pay-per-view and just about anyone else. But in WWE, I think they are able to really take a match and the audience accepts it as a real spectacular match. And that's the end goal. That's the whole purpose of it, is how your audience receives it. But I mean, just right off the top of my head, like that Hell in a Cell we're just a few months removed from, I thought was one of the best Hell in a Cell matches that the company has had. And that was only back in October. There have been a lot of great matches in WWE this year.
Yeah. Is the quality of WWE matches on a whole slipping lately? Honestly, I don't think that's something I would necessarily complain about, because I think on the whole their product has been enjoyable, and I don't necessarily think like having high quality matches is for most people a barometer of whether or not they're enjoying the WWE product. Again, it matters, but it doesn't necessarily matter as much as like coherent storytelling and hot characters and hot storylines, of which I think they have plenty. And I'm also considering, like, they do, like, I think give a good amount of like good quote unquote in ring content, you know, for in their mid card, for instance, like having a Gunther hold, well, Gunther's not even mid card, but like having Gunther, you know, have his style of matches on every single show tends to fulfill, I think, a certain need for a lot of people to want to see high quality in ring product. I thought like Sammy and Drew tonight was very good. Certainly not of like a, you know, like a pay-per-view standard, but I think at least for a TV standard, I was satisfied with it. Mm. But yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it's something I would feel like is a detriment to the product at all. I mean, it depends what you're looking for from WWE programming, but I would say for most people, I don't think it's that big of a problem for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to Saturday Night's Main Event, which is a more recent example, like there was a show that was, I mean, almost 95% bell-to-bell wrestling. And it was a very enjoyable show. It was fast-paced wrestling. Nothing that was like match of the year quality, but like everything kind of served its purpose. My argument would have been, I do feel that show would have been boosted by if you had had a CM Punk, Seth Rollins segment in the middle there to set up their January 6th match, or even you set up the Roman Reigns Solo Sikoa match, like a segment, just a big under one roof segment, which is what I'm going to call these from now on. Like, I think the audience, they really want those segments and big stars where there's a big announcement, there's news, and you know, you get Punk and Rollins for 10 minutes in the ring. I would not doubt that if you were to put those two in the middle of that Saturday Night's Main Event broadcast, it wouldn't surprise me if that would have been the peak segment of Punk and Rollins talking for 10 minutes on NBC. And I'm very curious how they structure the follow-up next month and if it gets the same level of emphasis and promotion like this first one, which was kind of built up as like a 2-week build for a pay-per-view.
Mm. All right, let's go lastly here to Ani, who says, I had a good time with this episode of Raw. The opening promo with Sami Zayn and Drew McIntyre was excellent. A great deal of thought went into the writing. I also liked their match later on. The match had a good story built around Sami's back. Some of Sami's selling was excellent. I also loved the New Day segment, which was excellent despite the canned crowd noise. The backstage interaction with Dom and New Day was funny. Chuckled at the thought that they're trying to get the New Day Dom levels of heat by telling you what they did was so vile that even Dom thought it was beneath him. I thought Seth Freakin had a good sit-down interview. Looking forward to the match at Netflix, but I hope this feud doesn't extend until Mania. You guys making fun of the WWE writing team for using ROH for connective tissue is the best bit in wrestling podcasting at the moment.
We try. We try. We just throw it out there. And we
just call what we see.
What catches on. All right. So at this point, we will say goodbye to those that do not want their Christmas ruined with the Hammerstein Ballroom show. So we are going to go over the results from Wednesday's Dynamite and what the semifinals are. So zero complaining from this point forward. Have a wonderful holiday. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with the Christmas show on Tuesday. Bye-bye. Now, on to Dynamite on 34th Street, their third night at the Hammerstein Ballroom, and we will go through the results, and then we will explain what all of it means in terms of the points and where everything lands. So we had five Continental Classic matches on this show with Will Ospreay defeating Brody King. This has gotten rave reviews, this particular match. So that brings Ospreay to 9 points and Brody King to 6. Darby Allin and Ricochet went the full 20 minutes. So Ricochet finished with 10 points while Darby Allin with 7. Commander got his one and only win in the Gold League, defeating Claudio Castagnoli. So Commander finished with 3, Claudio with 9. Kazuchika Okada defeated Shelton Benjamin, so Okada with 10, Benjamin with 6. Tony Storm over Taya Valkyrie, and then Kyle Fletcher moved up to 12 points, defeating Daniel Garcia, who finished with 7th. So that means in the Gold League, it was Will Ospreay and Ricochet moving on with Ricochet number 1, Ospreay number 2, and in the Blue League, Fletcher number 1, Okada number 2. So what that means is for World's End on Saturday, it will be Kyle Fletcher versus Will Ospreay in a rematch from Full Gear, and then on the other bracket, Okada versus Ricochet, and then later that night, we will get the final. So many scenarios that you can garner from these four. Way, hearing what the final four are you leaning towards one particular final that would make the most sense that is basically going to get like a couple hours notice before you're going to get what could be a pretty gigantic match if we're talking a potential Ospreay-Okada match, or you're getting another Ospreay-Ricochet match, or if Fletcher advances, all viable candidates, I guess, to win.
All viable, absolutely. So I know Fletcher, for maybe even myself, was like a front runner leading to all this. But I think seeing the other bracket, you're talking about essentially 3 out of the 4 being heels. And therefore, I think Will Ospreay probably has to go. We're also, talking probably likely 50-50 booking when it comes to Ospreay getting his win back over Kyle Fletcher. So I'm predicting Ospreay wins his block. And he will probably take on... Well, we just saw the Ricochet match, and I think Ricochet is like suddenly coming in with a lot of momentum, you know, post this heel turn that has been the most talked about thing in AEW over the past week. Okay. And we saw the results of it on Saturday. This crowd is responding. And I would certainly say in these few days, I would classify it as a successful heel turn. And I think the reaction in the Okada match will be interesting, you know, to see who the crowd favors. I'm predicting Okada to play babyface in that one, because I think the crowd will boo Ricochet. But I also think it'll be Will Ospreay taking on the defending champion in Kazuchika Okada, because we've already seen the match with Ricochet and Ospreay. But if I'm going to pick Ospreay, I'm going to go with Ospreay Okada, with Ospreay winning.
I'm leaning towards Ospreay and Okada. That's... You know, for a first time meeting in AEW, that's a really big match, I think, to not be able to promote in advance. But I guess
But the G1 is like that.
The G1, you at least get like one night to sell that people can decide if they want to go and buy tickets to go see it the next day. For this one, I mean, listen, this is an audience that, I mean, you have to realize that's a potential. And listen, like any of these combinations, like, you know, quality wise, it's going to be very, very strong.
It's a good final four. Yeah.
Yeah. I really don't. I'm sure there are those that would argue this is like for Ospreay, it's the idea he loses a third pay-per-view in a row. I really don't like that idea for Ospreay at this point, even if it's like he gets this big, gigantic run at when he turns the corner on all of it. I see Ospreay in the final here. I don't know what the end is going to be, but if you are doing Ospreay and Okada, and And this has been thrown out, this idea that before he does the January 5th show, that he will be doing an AEW appearance. Like, Kenny Omega, at the end of that show, confronting one of them, that's about as strong of an end to a show as you could get. And you could do it with either one, with Ospreay or Okada. It would be, I would think, leaning more towards Okada, who just feels like he's got nothing coming out of this, and Ospreay you can go in so many different ways with, but really you're not going to be
you're leaning towards Okada winning
if it is with that in mind, to lead towards Kenny Omega coming back, and you're going to get the first Omega Okada match in AEW sometime in the new year.
Interesting.
But you could also go with Ospreay too and do the same scenario. I would argue that if you're throwing Kenny Omega out of the mix, I said last week, I'd like Ospreay winning this tournament. I think he needs something big. Mm-hmm. I think Will Ospreay has kind of, you know, fiddled around enough as sort of this out of the championship picture participant that I wouldn't want to be playing that game too long with Ospreay. Like, I do feel this is who your audience sees as the top star in this company. And I think winning this tournament would do the most benefit for Ospreay into the new year.
Even though he's winning the Continental, he's not challenging for the world championship after this.
Well, I think that if you do want to bypass and hold off on him going for the championship, this does give the prestige of this Continental Classic tournament and this belt. So that would be my thought. I don't think there's like a bad option here of where you go with, but if you're asking me this many days out, I could see the Ospreay Okada final.
Would you like it if Ricochet won the C2?
sure. If it doesn't require him being emasculated on his celebration on the following Dynamite, that would be one way to go. I mean, they really did give you like a really shitty finish to Ospreay and Ricochet, but I feel that is one you could certainly run back at a later time. I don't see that as the option here.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I see Okada making it to the final just to make that transition of the championship that much clearer. So
I've really been into this tournament over the last week to 10 days, and going into this, like, I think this is going to be a tremendous tournament by the end of it that we look back on it as. I think it's really hit its stride. I think Ospreay and Darby Allin was just out of this world, and, you know, they had another great show on Saturday. I don't doubt that, like, this sounds like a really great Dynamite for Wednesday, and I think, like, and ultimately, the tournament is going to be remembered for Saturday's matches on the pay-per-view, which, I mean, could all be stellar, all three of them.
Let's finish off here with one last super chat to hear from Karthik, who sends 40 rupees. Thank you very much for that support, Karthik. He says, who are your contenders for best talkers of 2024?
I mean, Wei mentioned like Drew McIntyre. I'll just say this. I haven't put my list together yet. I think there's a lot of candidates this year. There's been some years where that's been a struggle of a category, especially for WWE. Like, that has not been a domain of WWE for years. And this year, I think there's going to be a plethora of contenders that we're naming next week. So I do appreciate the donation. Tune in for the best and worst of show, and we'll have a better breakdown of the best talkers of 2024. But I think promos have become a real big strength of WWE in 2024.
I mean, if we're just throwing names out there, you know, that might be people that we would be considering. I think Gunther has this year been like somebody who has impressed us so much. Obviously, you know, somebody like a CM Punk, I think, is always going to have a consideration for a list like that. Whether or not this year's worth of content is enough to get him the best award remains to be seen.
Sami Zayn, Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens, like, we're just talking WWE. And, you know, you go over to like AEW, like, who would think like Will Ospreay would develop into this level of a promo where he's been just spectacular in that role. Like, everyone
who would you rate as the better promo in 2024, Ospreay or MJF?
Ospreay.
I think I would too. And I did not think I would say that at the beginning of this year.
MJF has got outstanding delivery. I don't think that it feels as though like the material has not advanced, and he has not had that program that he has truly been able to sink his teeth into, and more importantly, that the audience has been able to sink his teeth into. He's been away for a long time, and the Adam Cole stuff, like feud may come up, but I don't know if it's going to be on the best of portion.
There might be a bit of recency bias. Like, I mean, we're talking about like MJF probably at maybe one of the more down periods in terms of perception of his tenure in AEW. But yeah,
I will say the face-to-face under one roof segment, I thought for Adam Cole and MJF, I did think the segment was pretty good on Saturday for Collision, at least for a program that I think has really had its challenges. I did like the segment on Saturday, and you know, we will see. They, you know, Saturday is the match, but this is quite the pay-per-view that is shaping up. We will do a more formal preview on Friday's Rewind to SmackDown going into the weekend of World's End. Mm-hmm. But there you have it. There are the results for Dynamite on Wednesday night and what is coming up at the World's End pay-per-view. But we will sign off and say goodbye. The Christmas show drops on Christmas Eve. We hope you drop by, whether it's for an hour, whether it's for however long we end up going. It will be worth your time.
It won't
and
just,
then some.
It'll be more than an hour. We can probably
you don't have to work the next day. Maybe take a couple days off after that to recover. God knows we will. And that's it. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. Have a wonderful holiday season. Don't drink and drive. Don't text and drive. Don't drive, period. It's cold out. There's snow falling outside my window right now. Just stay inside and listen to the post-wrestling Christmas show all holiday long. And you can be the person in your family that just goes off and puts your headphones on and laughs uproariously by themselves in the corner.
That's us. Okay. Yeah.
On that note, goodbye, everyone. We will speak with you on Christmas Eve.